It's a real treat for me to be here with you. If you'll be turning to James chapter 1, we're going to be looking at the first 12 verses this morning for this session. It's not a news flash for anybody to say that every person has struggles in life. Every person goes through trials and tribulations, to use some of those fancier words. And, you know, people have, to put it mildly, they have bad days sometimes. And sometimes those bad days are really minor when we think about it, although in the moment they seem incredibly serious and stressful and taxing. And sometimes those bad days are truly bad days. You know, we go through struggles like financial struggles. We go through losing jobs. We go through the breakup of relationships and marriages. We go through sicknesses. As we age, our bodies don't work quite as well as they used to, and sometimes they really take a turn for the worse. Sometimes we even deal with the death of a loved one, or we even deal with our death that's a little bit sooner than we had anticipated and that we would like. And it's not any different for the Christian. Many times we know it's not the case, but as we go through life, we kind of get it in our head that it should be the case for whatever reason. But we think, well, I'm a good Christian and I'm living a clean life, so to speak. I'm not sinning. I don't have quote unquote bad habits and all these kinds of things. And then, we're sort of caught flat footed when the struggles of life hit us, trials and tribulations and those things that are difficult for us to deal with. And sometimes those can really, rock our faith. And for some, that those kinds of things have even shattered, their faith. And James opens up his letter by jumping right in to trials that Christians have to go through. If we start in verse 2, just skipping the opening salutation or the opening greeting, he says, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." James starts off in the first four verses by telling us that there are advantages to trial. There is a big advantage to trial. He says trial produces steadfastness, which at the end of the day results in our, the New American Standard says perfection, but really what it means is maturity, spiritual maturity, completeness. And that's a huge advantage to trial. And that's why he starts off in verse 2 by saying, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials." I don't know about you, but trials, struggles in life are not very joyful to me in a very real sense. All of us pray to God, or at least we should, to help us through these trials and to take these struggles away from us. But how can I consider it all joy? Well, you see, when I go through a trial, I'm better on the other side. See, I look back in my life and I have had struggles and you've had struggles, and I'm not comparing my struggles to yours. I'm sure that many of you have gone through far worse things than I've had to go through up to this point in my life. But I've had some struggles, and at the time those struggles would seem insurmountable maybe. I don't know how I'm going to get through them, but then I did. And as I look back on those, I realize that every time I've gone through something like that, I've grown. I'm a better person for it. I'm a better Christian for it. And, you know, they produce, if you will, well, look back in verse 2, or verse 3, excuse me, "knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance." See, trials, struggles in life serve as a testing or a proving ground for our faith. When a person is first baptized, they have, if you will, a certain level of endurance to get to heaven. They can only withstand so much. If I were to try and run a marathon right now, unless you gave me about 2 weeks to get it done and allowed me to stay in a hotel every night and those kinds of things, I would not be able to do it because I don't have the endurance to do it. Now, there probably are a few people in this room that have maybe even recently run a marathon. Well, I might could run a mile, not a fast one, but I might have the endurance to do that. But what do I need to do if I want to be able to actually run a marathon and complete it? Well, I have to build up my endurance. Well, as a Christian, what am I trying to do? From the moment I'm baptized, especially, I'm trying to make it to heaven. I'm trying to endure this race of life and make it to heaven. And what a trial does, what a struggle does, is it helps me be able to run, so to speak, that much farther. And that's why God allows me to go through those things. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 4, or 24, do you not know that those who run, all run competing for the prize, but only one wins? The whole idea, though, is he says, run in such a way that you may win. The whole idea is we run a race, but we need to run it so that we can win. When we are increasing our endurance, if you will, or when a person wants to exercise or lift weights or try and improve their health, the moment or during the time that they're doing that, it hurts. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. In some respects, it's not enjoyable. Now, I know there are odd people out there that enjoy exercising, and I say that tongue-in-cheek. I don't exercise too much, and that's not a good thing. I need to, I know, especially as I get older. But see, that temporary pain, that temporary discomfort, that temporary time where my body is taxed, when it's over and my body has had some time to recover, I actually have greater strength, greater endurance, and greater health. And the same is true with the trial. When I've gone through that struggle, when I've gone through that trial, I'm able to continue my race toward heaven. And James says the trial produces ultimately completion. Let endurance have its perfect result so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. It achieves spiritual maturity. It brings a person to completeness in Christ. Weak spots are found and they're shored up, so to speak. When gold is discovered or some other precious metal is discovered, it's not discovered in its pure form. It has impurities in it. And so a smelter will take it, a refiner, and he will heat it up in order to be able to extract the impurities from it and make it more valuable. Well, that's what trials do for us. They remove the impurities in our faith, and help us to have a greater dependence on God and a greater ability to handle ourselves in a godly way. Scripture tells us there's a great advantage to trial. If you look in 1 Peter chapter 1, Peter is writing to a group of Christians who are being persecuted. And in verses 6 and 7, he says, in this, in your salvation, you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Peter says, yes, you're going through persecutions right now, but because of your salvation, you're rejoicing in this because they are proving your faith. They're making your faith, your trust in God, better. In Romans 5, 3 through 5, Paul says, not only this, but we also exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance. When I did run back when I was in junior high and high school and I ran track, I didn't really like running distance because that required a lot of stamina and effort and things like that. But one thing I learned is when you do that, you have to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And if you keep putting one foot in front of the other, eventually you make it to the finish line. And that's what trials do for us. They help us to keep putting one foot in front of the other. There's an advantage to trial, and it's easy for us to forget that when we're in the midst of trial. When I was a teenager, I liked to play guitar, and there was a guitar I just had my eye on. I wanted that guitar. The guitar I'd had up till that point was just this very inexpensive guitar that had been given to my parents free when they had bought a piano many years earlier. It wasn't a very good guitar. It was good enough, I guess, to play on, but it wasn't what I wanted. Well, there was this guitar that I had my eye on, and at least from my economic ability, it was very expensive. Now, it wasn't expensive as far as guitars go, but for me, it was very expensive. And so I wanted that guitar. That was my goal. And so I got myself a job at about 14 years old working on a ranch. And that is not the easiest work in the world, to say the least, if you've ever done it. I enjoyed some aspects of it, feeding chickens and milking goats and the little bit of work with the cattle I was able to do, but there were some things I did not enjoy at all. It snows in Colorado sometimes, and when you're standing in a ditch trying to clean that ditch out and it's snowing, it's cold. And then when you're standing out in the hot sun in the middle of summer building a fence, that's not the most enjoyable work. But you know what? Through that trial, if you will, through that struggle, I was able to keep putting one foot in front of the other. I was able to persevere. Why? Because I knew what it was going to produce. It was going to produce a paycheck. And that paycheck was going to eventually allow me to purchase that guitar. And so every time when the sun would beat down on me or things would get a little cold outside, depending on what time of year it was, I would think about that guitar that I was slowly but surely getting enough money to save up for. And I still own that guitar, by the way. I don't play it ever, but I still own it. But brethren, it's easy to forget what trials produce in us when we're in the middle of it. It's easy for all of us to do that. When the struggle is hitting us, it's not easy to count it all joy. But you know what? From one perspective, we need to look at it and remember that this trial is helping us get to heaven. My struggle on the ranch was helping me get that guitar. Our struggles here on earth help us get to heaven. And so from that thought, it's very joyful to go through the trial because we have that much greater of an ability to get to heaven. So James points out in the first four verses the advantage that there is to trial. It produces a spiritual maturity and endurance that helps us achieve our goal of heaven. But then in verses 5-8, he tells us here's the solution. He says here's the advantage, but here's how you get through it in and of itself. We have to know how to navigate it. And he says, but if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith without any doubting, for the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Brethren, one characteristic of trial is it's difficult to navigate through it. Many struggles in life we've never been through before, so we really don't know what to do. Sometimes we might even throw up our hands and say, I have no idea what to do. Even if we've been through it before, it still may be difficult to get through it. We still may be unsure of what to do. And so what do we need? Well, we need wisdom. We need to know how to get through it. And it just so happens that since we lack wisdom, we have a God who's willing to give as much as we need. You know, often we lack the wisdom necessary to pick a proper path through the difficulty and emerge victorious on the other side. You know, sometimes if a relationship breaks down or a marriage breaks up, that's, for most people, that's probably the first time that's happened. They don't know what to do. They're caught by surprise. They're caught unaware. They're devastated. What do they do? You know, for somebody who's dealing with a sickness or a death, what do you do? You know, I don't know what to do, per se. And especially when it hits me, sometimes it seems like my struggles almost paralyze me. What do I do? If I lose my job, what do I do? How am I going to pay my bills? All those questions pop up. And James says, just ask God for wisdom. And notice what God will do. Notice what God will do. James says God will give wisdom to us in verse 5. He says he'll give wisdom to us generously, and he'll give wisdom to us without reproach. If we ask God for wisdom, he'll make sure that we get it. But he won't just give us a little bit. He's not like the headmaster, if you ever saw Oliver Twist. He's not like the headmaster at the orphanage in Oliver Twist, who, yes, he feeds the kids, but he doesn't feed them near enough, and so Oliver has to go and ask for some more and cause a big ruckus. He gives generously. He gives to us all the wisdom that we need to get through that trial. And notice as well, he gives us wisdom without reproach. I don't know if you've ever run into a person like this, but I have. Maybe there have been times where I have been ignorant of how to do something or been a little unsure about what to do or how to go about things in a particular situation. And so there's somebody else around who's done it before, who seems like they're an old hand at it, and I'll ask them, can you help me with this? Or what am I supposed to do here? Something like that. And they'll tell me, they'll help me, but the whole time they'll say things like, I can't believe you don't know how to do this. I mean, I knew how to do this when I was 10 years old. I mean, you must not be from around here. Or where did you grow up, boy? Something like that, where I feel like an utter fool because I'm not as smart, at least in this area, as he is. But that's not how God looks at us. That's not how God gives us wisdom. He doesn't say to us, well, I can't believe, Will, you're having such a hard time with this and you don't know what to do. Well, I can't believe that you haven't already learned how to navigate this kind of trial. No, he has compassion on us. And he understands that these are difficult struggles. Even sometimes what we may look at as a minor thing when we reflect back on it in the moment is a big deal. And God understands that. You know, a 12, 13, 14-year-old boy who has his heart broken, 20 years later when he reflects back, may not seem like such a big deal, but in that moment, that was a struggle. That was a trial. And God doesn't look at him and shame him for feeling that way. You know, how does God give wisdom to us? Well, there are a few ways that at least I know of, at least a few possibilities. But one definite way he gives it to us is through his word. 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, all scripture is inspired by God and is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be adequate, thoroughly equipped for every good work. You know, one great and wonderful way to gain wisdom and help in a trial is to read what the Bible has to say about getting through that trial, getting through that episode in life. Read about all the ways that God has helped his people out from Genesis chapter 1 all the way through Revelation chapter 22. Read about how God has never let anyone down that's been faithful to him. Read about how we'll have a great victory if we just stay faithful to him. Read the book of Proverbs, for instance, which has so many great bits of wisdom to deal with life's situations. Another way God may give us wisdom is we have Christian brothers and sisters who have been through the same thing that we've been through before. And they can give us advice and encouragement and help us to get through that trial as well. But notice what James also says. He must ask, verse 6, in faith without any doubting. For the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. He must ask in faith. He must ask for this wisdom, this help in faith. He's got to trust that God's going to help him, that God will do what he has promised to do. Because if a man doubts, God can't do anything for him. If he doubts, he's like the surf of the sea that's driven and tossed by the wind. I don't know if you've ever seen the sea during a storm, but you can have a wave that goes this direction one moment, and then the next moment it comes from this direction, and the next moment it may come from this direction. And so if you were to be in the sea, or if you were to be in a boat in the sea at that time, the boat is just going to be all over the place. You never know where he's going to be. In verse 7, James says that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. That man is here one moment, and then he's somewhere else the next. One moment he's on cloud nine, he thinks, I can make it through this, and the next moment he's on the floor, believing that God has deserted him. See, even if God could give this person wisdom, it would do no good, because that man doesn't trust what God would tell him to do. That man's trusting in himself. See, he doesn't have faith that God can get him through it. He's putting his faith somewhere else. Proverbs 2 and verse 6 says, the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. You know, that he's supplied us providentially with a number of helps on this earth, but ultimately it's God who gets us through this trial. And how often when trials come upon us, do we go to God first? You know, normally what we do is what? Something happens and I start thinking, well, what do I need to do? Okay? You know, so I go to myself first. And then I may call a friend or a family member and say, this has happened to me, what do I do now about it? And then maybe I might call up the doctor if it's a medical issue, or I might call up a counselor to try and get some help with it, or maybe I call up, law enforcement or a lawyer or something, depending on what the struggle or what the trial is. Or maybe it's just something where I just go home and I find something that I can throw against the wall or break or smash to get my anger out at what's going on. And what do I need to do first? What I need to do first is bow my head and take it to God and ask God to give me wisdom, to give me help to get through this. And then I need to explore potentially those other avenues. You see, if I try to work it out by myself, God can't give me wisdom, because I've already shown that I don't trust him. If I don't trust him, whatever wisdom he would give me, I won't accept, because I'm looking to myself. When I worked on that ranch, it would have been, in some respects, easy to just trust in myself. When I first started working on that ranch, I didn't know how to feed a chicken. I didn't know how to milk anything. I didn't know how to build a fence. Or at least I knew how to build one kind of fence, but not the kind that my boss needed me to build. He could tell me to go clean out a ditch, but I didn't quite know what that meant. So what did I have to do? I had to go to him for wisdom to help me through that trial so that I could, if you will, keep my job and keep earning that paycheck. You see, James tells us the advantage to trial, and then he tells us the solution to trial. And then thirdly, if you look in verses 9 through 12, he tells us what our response to trial is. Okay, I know how to get through it. Now how should I view my trial? He said, but the brother of humble circumstances is to glory in his high position, and the rich man is to glory in his humiliation, because like flowering grass, he will pass away, for the sun rises with a scorching wind and withers the grass, and its flower falls off, and the beauty of its appearance is destroyed. So too the rich man in the midst of his pursuits will fade away. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trial. For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. So what's the response to the trial or the struggle that we're going through? The response, James says, in essence, to boil it all down, is to view life from a spiritual perspective. Don't look at life through, don't look at your trial, don't look at your struggle through a worldly lens. And he uses a poor and a rich man as his examples. The poor man, looking at his struggle in life through a worldly lens, thinks all hope is lost. I'm barely making ends meet, or I'm not making ends meet at all. I don't know what I'm going to do. But if he looks at it through a spiritual lens, he realizes that this trial is just helping him get to heaven. And that he can, as James puts it, glory in his high position. He's a child of the Creator of the universe. He is able to receive the crown of life, James says in verse 12. See, if he's looking at his current wealth as the best he'll ever do, then he's not going to make it through that struggle. He's not going to make it through that trial, because that's depressing. That's demoralizing. But when he looks at it through a spiritual lens and realizes he has wealth untold waiting for him if he just keeps persevering, if he just keeps enduring, going back to the first few verses that we looked at, he shouldn't feel inferior or cheated because of his poverty. He shouldn't look at life as if wealth is the answer to all his struggles, because it's not. God is the answer to all his struggles. James looks at the rich man and he says, and for the rich man who looks at his life through a physical lens, he thinks he has it made. I've got all that I need. Life is good. I lack for nothing. But from a spiritual lens, the rich man realizes it's not going to last forever. One day I'm going to be dead, and all those riches will be enjoyed by somebody else. And even if I am able to enjoy them for a long time, the day will come when they are no more. So the rich man can glory in his humiliation, so to speak. He can glory in the fact that this isn't the sum total of his existence. He has a crown of life to look forward to as well. And that's why James completes the thought that he began in verse 2 by saying, blessed is the man who perseveres, who endures the struggle, who endures in the trial, who keeps putting one foot in front of the other. For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. So how do we get through the trial? Well, if you look in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 through 24, Peter tells us how Jesus made it through the struggle, the trial of his crucifixion. He was terribly mistreated. He was terribly abused. And Peter says, for you've been called, chapter 2 and verse 21 of 1 Peter, you've been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats. Here's what he did. But kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. See, Jesus, when he was undergoing his crucifixion, there's a lot of things he could have done. When he was falsely accused and verbally abused, he could have had all these ready answers, these ready comebacks, to say to them to put people in their place. He could have cried out for mercy. He could have said, this isn't fair, please stop. He could have used his power to bring an end to it all. He could have used his power to punish everyone who was unjustly treating him, or treating him unjustly. But what did he do instead? He just put his situation in God's hands. He just entrusted himself to him who judges righteously. And that's essentially what James is telling us to do in order to get through our trials in life. Something may happen to us and we may look around and say, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. Something may happen to us, some struggle or trial in life, and we may even, it may feel to us like all we can do is fasten our seatbelt and hang on. And we have no idea where we're going or what we're doing as far as where life is taking us. You know, and that can be scary, that can be nerve-wracking, but what does James tell us to do? Entrust ourselves to God, to borrow from Peter. Bow our heads. Ask God for his wisdom and his help, and he'll give to us generously without reproach. And we need to understand that maybe even though we can't see the end of the struggle, even though we don't know how things are going to turn out, we may not even know how we're going to deal with it tomorrow kind of a thing, that if we just keep doing what God tells us to do, that this trial will somehow, some way produce in us an endurance that brings us to spiritual maturity and allows us to make it to the end and receive the crown of life. See, how often do we view life just from a physical perspective? You know, if we lose our job, we have the very real concern of how to pay our bills, how we're going to put food on the table, and all of those kinds of things. But you know what? God will give us the wisdom to handle it. We may not be able to see the end of it. We may not know how we're going to do things, but God will help us. Maybe we're dealing with a relationship difficulty, the breakup of a marriage or something like that, and we may not know really what to do. We may be so devastated that we don't even know how we're going to make it to tomorrow. But if we ask God for help, he'll give us the wisdom to deal with it. Now, that doesn't mean that he takes the trial away. That doesn't mean that he removes the difficulty from it. It just means he gives us the ability to deal with it. Maybe it's sickness. Maybe it's someone, a loved one's death, or maybe it's my own impending death that may be sooner than I would like. God will give us the wisdom to deal with it. You know, if you know, there were times when I look back on that job that I worked on that ranch, and at the time I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this. When I first started working on that ranch, every day when I would get home, I thought that I was just going to die. I mean, it was hard work. And I, you know, growing up in town, you know, I didn't have to do that hard of a work. You know, I'd mow the lawn and pull weeds and those kinds of things. But when you're working 8 or more hours a day doing those kinds of things, it's hard work. But you know what? Over time, I built up my endurance. And over time, I would get off of work at 5 or 6, and then I'd go home and I would still have energy to do more than just collapse in my bed after I took a shower or something like that. And you know, the day came where I didn't have to endure that kind of hardship, so to speak, anymore. I was able to buy that guitar and all that good stuff. Brethren, James tells us that there's an advantage to trial. We need to remember that. Trial helps us get to heaven. We may not see how, but it does. It produces in us an endurance that brings us to spiritual maturity. And there's a solution to trial. And that's asking God for wisdom and for help. If we do that, He'll give it to us. And that's how we get through it. And then there's a response to trial. It's keeping in the forefront of our mind that this isn't all there is. This isn't the end. That viewing life from a spiritual perspective, viewing the difficulty in life from a spiritual perspective, helps us to realize that all this is in the scope of eternity is just a momentary hardship that really helps us to obtain that eternal crown of life. Thank you very much for your kind attention.